Hello, this is Daniel Jockett.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, That Little Tinge of Uncertainty. Well, Manton, I've been just flitting all about, as usual, with my professional and personal endeavors. You know, I'm famous for being the world's biggest cheerleader for Swift, right?
Like, is that right?
Yeah, you know, the way that I've consistently championed the language on this show and overlooked some little inconveniences about it that a pickier person might latch onto.
So you've been busy porting everything to Swift.
Yeah, that's the ticket. I have been actively avoiding Swift mostly, as you know, and as most of our listeners know. And of course, I've had some very passionate responses from listeners who, so in some cases, don't even really stop short of calling me a fool for this stance.
Yeah, we got some good feedback about that.
Yeah, I'm taking all the blame here myself, even though you've basically been right there with me saying similar things. So,
yep.
You and I are the Luddites from the past who are neglecting to see the beauty of this new language, and that's not even true. Actually, we both, I think, acknowledge it's a beautiful new language. But
yeah, once you get past all the question marks and exclamation marks, it's great.
I know we traded brackets for exclamation marks and question marks. Oh, boy.
Just kidding. Continue, please.
Well, anyway, I just thought I'd mention that I worked on a project over the past week or so that was in Swift.
Excellent.
At least the parts that I could do in Swift easily were in Swift. So, well, one file is in Swift.
Well, that's the thing. So we'll talk about the project, but I just quickly glanced through it. It's on GitHub, which is a whole other thing in itself that we can talk about. But I did notice that, yeah, there's the main file is Swift, but then you've pulled in shared code that's in Objective-C.
Yeah.
And I don't know, did you count the number of lines? Like, is there more shared code in Objective-C than there is Swift, or is there more Swift?
There's definitely more shared code. There's more Objective-C in this project than Swift, which is funny because I did set out to make this new application with the exercise in mind. Oh, I'm going to make a Swift app. Mm-hmm. Because, well, a little backstory for folks. And if anyone wants to follow along at home, you can go to the GitHub page. It's at danielpunkass.com/blockpass. Like, you're going to block a pass. And the tool is very single-minded in that it's basically my solution for something that I wanted. And the wonderful text expander, of course, for the Mac almost gave me what I wanted, which is every time I start to type my password inadvertently into a non-password field, you know, stop me from doing it, pop up an alert that says, hey, stop that. You're about to share your password. Because, you know, unfortunately, within the past few weeks, I actually ended up typing my full long, very secure password right into an IRC window. And
yeah.
And then I was like, I mean, when that happens, first of all, it's an instant security risk, right? And then it's also just like super embarrassing because if your password looks at all like a password, yeah, there's like no getting, it's like, oh, that was just, oops, fell on my keyboard. No. That's,
yeah.
You know, you fell on your keyboard and hit like, you know, keys from all over the place, punctuation, et cetera.
Your password was just like, hey guys, what's up? Or something, then first of all, that's actually a pretty secure password. Well, maybe not that, but if it's long enough, that's a pretty secure password.
Password should just be
together.
It should just be wrong window,
right?
But anyway, I made this tool, which was kind of a fun exercise for me. Even if I hadn't chosen to use Swift, because it required me to kind of get my hands into the it's called Core Graphics, but it doesn't make any sense, but because it's just like events. But CG Event Tap, does that ring a bell to you? It's the system prescribed method for essentially doing stuff like keyloggers. It's the kind of technology that an app like Text Expander uses to be able to keep an eye on all the keys that are being pressed. And in the case of Text Expander, as in the case of My Little Utility, wait for certain substrings to be typed and do something. The problem was I couldn't use Text Expander for this solution because I use Text Expander with the delimiter feature, which means that it doesn't process anything you've typed until a delimiter of your choice is typed. In my case, it's a space, so I don't I don't have anything until a space. So I guess I could put a space in my password,
right?
And that would do it. But anyway, I kind of got my got down this road of like, I want to do this, I want to figure this out, make a little hack for myself. And since I knew it was going to be this kind of like throwaway project that I just used for myself, I didn't have to support old systems, didn't have to be particularly small, like code size, anything like that. I thought, well, let's just try to do this in Swift. It'll be a good exercise. I got down the road of like, made my app. You know, let me take a look at the GitHub here to refresh my memory. Yeah, that's right. I have appdelegate.swift. I started typing code and then I was like, oh, yeah. I need to make this one of these CG event taps. So I thought I could do this in Swift. And you know what? Maybe I can. But I started getting down that path where I'm like, it's got to call back to a C-style function callback.
Right.
Like, that's the way that works. And so then I'm like, oh, there might be some way to like massage this Swift function so that it gets called like a C function. I don't know. That'll be a different learning path. But I gave up and I said, you know what? I'm just going to make this nice little standalone Objective-C class whose job it is to monitor for substrings being typed. And that exists. And that's so, that's some of my concession to Objective-C. And then I realized after I made this app that I wanted to also enjoy the security of not having my password or even the prefix of it literally compiled into the tool, right? Because then somebody, I don't know, it just feels unsafe. You know, obviously somebody would have to get access to my computer. But certainly by the time I decided I'm going to share it on GitHub, then I definitely had to have a more secure approach. So then I started looking down the path of, you know, storing stuff in the keychain. And this was an example where I definitely could have done this in Swift, but I just have this like totally serviceable little class from my red sweater, like, you know, core libraries called RS Keychain.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll just use that. And so, you know, you start going down the path and pretty soon it's like, well, okay, yes, everything totally new that I coded for this that doesn't involve C callbacks was written in Swift.
So let me rewind just a couple seconds ago when you said, of course, I could have done that in Swift. The Keychain APIs are just straight up C API still, so for some reason. And it's like Objective-C programmers are always frustrated. They're like, why is this thing that's so important that everyone should use not available in some kind of nice, friendly Objective-C API? The rest of us, we had some code long ago to do this, and we just keep reusing it over and over. And this is going to point out how little I've done with Swift, but can you actually call those? I know you can. Swift has stuff for dealing with different kinds of C structures and different data types and stuff, but can you just call one of those keychain APIs from Swift without like bridging to Objective-C first?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't specifically done it, but I think one of the key kind of marketing points for Swift is that you can call C functions from it. And like you do, you call like core foundation stuff, right, if you want to. It just needs to be, I don't know if that's like, the standard kind of like Swift bridging header or what, but you can do it. And I think I would have done it if it weren't for the fact that, like I said, I just had this whole, it would have just been me retyping an existing class I have in Swift for no other reason than to do that. And yes, like all the calls would have been to C functions. So it's kind of like Swift, but with a C idiom. And at some point you just got to ask yourself why even bother?
Yeah. Just the learning experience maybe, but yeah. And this goes, it's funny. I haven't done anything since really WWDC with Swift. And I probably knew the answer to some of these questions then. I've already forgotten half of what I knew about Swift just because I'm not actively working with it.
Yeah, so but you know, I did get to use a little bit of Swift, and I made myself like, you know, figure out how to get past some stumbling blocks, and I found myself, you know, probably informed a little bit by my JavaScript experience that I've picked up here and there, but I found myself doing some things that were clearly not possible in Objective-C. Like I did some inline, you know, within one function, defined another function. And it felt good. It felt right. And that was nice. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention it because it's a good example of, even though I went out and tried to make something in Swift, granted it was like kind of the domain of what I was working with, maybe begged for lower level functions. But even though I went out and tried to do something in Swift, I still got diverted to using Objective-C. And
right. Well, that's okay. Says something about where, you know, the language is at right now, and also just your comfort level. I mean, you're not going to probably, you don't want to spend too much time on this. Originally, you weren't even going to open source it at all. It was just for your own personal use.
Right.
But the other part of this is you're actually using GitHub more, which of course is funny because we've talked on the show, and I think you've had lots of tweets related to this, and I think even some recently about, you know, resisting moving to Git completely. But you're obviously doing a lot with GitHub now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've always used GitHub. I mean, my use of GitHub does go back many, many, many years. And every time that I have shared something, you know, that I thought was like actually useful for a wide variety of people, I have, you know, I've conceded to use Git and to put it up on GitHub. And I'm not, no, that's my pragmatism there. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Mercurial fan. But the pragmatism of using Git for that is obvious to me. And now what you've been picking up on recently is, damn it, I may be just like tired of the fight on some level.
Yeah.
And so this doesn't particularly speak to that, because I would have put this up on GitHub a year ago as well, if I had made it. You know, for years I've been just saying like, well, that's fine. I'm not going to use Git for my own stuff because I have a choice, da 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 da. And it's like, I still feel that way. I'm still on Mercurial for my own stuff, but it's, I have to kind of face the facts at some point that there's like a cost to that. There's a cost of, you know, mentally keeping two systems in mind. It's like, you know, it would be kind of like having a job where you work on Windows all day and then insisting on working on Mac at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I could totally relate to that. I know people listening to this have that experience actually. But there is a cost to that defiance, you know? And like, maybe you should just keep going like that. Or maybe you should get a job that lets you use a Mac, or maybe you should just, you know, suck it up and use a PC at home too, if that's what sort of like leads you to having a streamlined like life where you're not focusing on things that ultimately aren't the most important things. I'm kind of just annoyed that Git won.
Yeah. Right. The nice thing though is that, I mean, I certainly feel the same way about, there's no point in fighting some battles. And like, I consolidated not just to Git, but also everything to GitHub. Like, I was split between GitHub for some projects and Beanstalk, private Git and Subversion hosting for another. And I put everything on GitHub just because, yeah, that cost of switching back and forth between things, there's just no real benefit at some point. But also, I mean, you've always said, you know, like Git is like the Windows of, you know, version control, and you were just talking about the sort of Mac at home, Windows at work analogy. And while there may be some truth to that, it's not as big of a deal because it's just checking on source code. It's not like you're not staring at, you know, whatever version control app you use 8 hours a day. So I think it's not, in my opinion, I mean, all of these, if I had to use Subversion every day, whatever, you know, it's like you just kind of live with that because it's not, one is not so much better than the other that it would be really frustrating, at least for me. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe, I'm not, maybe you this is not resonating
more often
for me
than I do.
It's not committing so much. It's the whole realm of everything you use version control for. Mm-hmm. So it's committing, but it's also searching the repository. It's bisecting. It's, you know, merging. It's all this stuff, and it's share. You know, it's sharing code. It's it's so well, like,
and that's the thing though. Like you said, searching. Like the thing about Git, maybe the commands are weird, and it's just kind of frustrating the way it's designed. But the tools are way better than anything else. You know, like GitHub, for example, is the best. I mean, it's really, really great. And it has full text search. It's got these diffs with syntax highlighting now and pull requests. And all. I mean, it does so many things that kind of leapfrog it above, not just make the annoying parts of Git better, but take it to another level, I think, where the tools are just much better than anything else.
Hmm. You know, I'll grant you that. I haven't used GitHub on my own source base, so I don't know on a practical day-to-day basis how much, you know, I haven't extensively used GitHub's search, you know, mechanism. So, you know, part of this is just habits. Like I'm used to how to use Mercurials. I still don't know how to say the same thing.
That's the other part.
But yeah, maybe if Mercurial had been named something people could pronounce quickly, would have been more successful. But like, you know, part of it's just habit, but I got my workflows with Mercurial's, you know, grep functionality, with its blame functionality, and all of this stuff definitely has counterparts in Git. But I just don't like the way it works.
Yeah.
So, yes, I can see the argument that if you come to appreciate, you know, it's arguable that GitHub is a version control system that happens to be implemented in Git under the surface. And if you go down, I think that's why. Oh, I think that's part of the reason that so many people, it's like it falls on. They can't relate at all to my disdain for Git, because I say like, oh, I hate Git, and they're like, well, what do you hate about it? Like, works fine for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, people ask me that, and I'm like, well, asking me to say what I hate about it is like asking me like to say what I hate about Windows. It's all the little things. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel like a nice thing. It doesn't feel like, you know, be like wearing a scratchy wool shirt. It's like, yeah, it keeps you warm and it looks fine, and everybody who looks at it says that's a perfectly good shirt, and you're like, I just don't like it. It doesn't feel good. So anyway, on that note, I'm switching to Git.
I think the tools, that's what it comes down to for me, is that, and I was late enough switching to Git that the tools were very mature and quite good by the time. So I almost never work in the command line now, you know.
That's a big distinction.
Every couple weeks or something, maybe I'll do something. And I think that makes a huge difference. If I was in terminal all day with Git, I would either build a new tool on top of it, or I would be a little more annoyed.
Well, I have this little fantasy of building something that, see, I can't let myself go down this road, Minton, but I have this fantasy of like building a Mercurial front end that happens do everything. And you know, people, before you email me, I know about HG Git. I know about these alternatives for, you know, interacting with Git repositories. They're just all a little fiddly. And I don't mind one iota the idea of having the technical infrastructure of my version control system, my repositories, be Git based. I don't mind a single teeny weeny tiny bit. I have no allegiance to Mercurial's binary format or whatever. If somebody handed me a copy of Mercurial that happened to really super duper reliably spit out, you know, Git repositories and work with Git repositories, problem solved. Let's move on. But that's not the case. So I don't know. I think I'm probably pretty close to throwing in the towel. I'm not there yet. Not exactly there yet. But I'm tired of the fight, and you know, there is a little bit of overhead to my involvement with the rest of the world because of this impedance mismatch of Git versus Mercurial. And you know, I use Kiln; it makes it a little easier. But even that's just a hassle. It's just a fussy little hassle to have to like translate from in when you think about stuff, you have to translate, you know, Mercurial and Git are so close that you can translate pretty easily. And especially, you know, a lot of people criticize Mercurial without knowing that it has all these features that essentially match what Git offers. And you have to kind of know what they are. So like in Mercurial, you have to know using a bookmark is like using a branch in Git. But keeping all that straight in my head, maybe it's not worth it. Maybe it's time to just move on to, you know, like you say, maybe just write your own little like shortcuts if you have to. But on the whole, just, yeah, I kind of think of it sometimes like, well, comparing it to Windows again, like what would I have to do to Windows to make it behave in ways that made me less annoyed, yeah. Right? And like what you were saying, like it's not the same because, well, you just check stuff in and it does the job. Well, that's how most people feel about operating systems. That's how most people feel. Like, what's the big deal? What's the difference between Mac and Windows? They both run Word, right? They both let me just, you know, open up a Word document, type, and then send an ugly newsletter. speaking on behalf of all of the people involved with my child's school.
Right.
But, well, you know.
It's, yeah, that's the thing about operating system is there's so much more there that you can't quickly patch it up like you can, I think. You can build some pretty good tools on top of this stuff that are simpler than, like, you know, fixing an operating system's flaws. And I think there's actually some pretty good variety in tools. I mean, I use Tower now, which I like a lot. But before that, I used Gitbox, which was really streamlined and had a completely different UI than pretty much any other tool that I've seen. And that part appealed to me, the way that it thought about workflow. So, I mean, you could come up with, you know, a completely different, you know, kind of UI on top of this stuff, too. And I think that is useful and powerful. One last question. Does it bother you that GitHub is named GitHub? Because, you know, I think you feel, and I would agree, that there may be another version control system coming along later that is so much better, you know, 5 years from now, that it sort of replaces the options we have now, including Git. And it's always felt weird to me that, I don't know, it's like they're holding themselves back a little bit by having Git in the name of their product. Because honestly, you don't really, to do some things on GitHub, you don't have to know anything about any of this underlying stuff. You know, they've got editing interfaces, they've got, you know, wikis and bug trackers. I mean, they've got all sorts of stuff right in there. And having that name, it feels like, especially as the company is probably hundreds of people now and just a big company, it feels like maybe at some point they should, if they want to last for 40 years, they need to think about a different company name.
Yeah, I don't know I don't know that they do though, because it's
so well known now. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's so well known. I almost think like they stole the name practically from Git. I mean, I don't mean that literally at all. I almost mean like their popularity has made it such that they have more, almost their hooks are more into the name Git than Git itself.
Yeah, and I certainly think that Git would not be where it is today if GitHub was based on something else.
Right, and like, who knows what the next, you know, so yeah, it's like addressing your question, basically the implicit question is what happens in 10 years when, you know, Shrub is the new version control system.
At least it's easy to pronounce.
Yeah, they're like, I'm going to call the company ShrubHub, you know, and no, they're just going to keep calling it GitHub. And it's going to be kind of like international business machines.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not that big of a deal that nobody even knows what a business machine is, right? Like, it's just IBM. Like, I think that these things, like names, they sort of like, oh, right, Radio Shack. Maybe not a good example going out of business, but yeah. Radio Shack, like, everybody knows that's like radios is not their main thing. But you know, I don't know, for all we know, maybe GitHub will be behind the next big version control system, and it will be totally better than Git and totally better than Mercurial and totally better than the Bazaar and obviously better than Subversion and CVS and better than Perforce and all this other stuff. And they will just call it GitHub. You know, like,
yeah, that's interesting.
Maybe that's what will happen.
Yeah, I could actually see them doing something like that. I mean, they've got native clients. They've got a text editor now. They really have a lot of great stuff and forward-thinking engineers.
Yeah. But, that is the bright side to it, that GitHub is basically so good that I honestly can look forward to some. I don't know if I would put my own stuff up there. I kind of have this weird, like, propriety thing about, I don't know. I don't mind putting my open source up there, but I know you host closed source stuff there, and mm-hmm. a lot of people do. Maybe I need to get over that, but I don't know. I'm curious to see how 2015 turns out for my relationship with Mercurial.
Yeah, we'll follow up in a year. Let's see how it goes.
We'll see if I switch to Git before you start using Twitter again.
Right. I think I know how I'd place a bet on that.
But. Yeah, it's a good thing neither one of us has very strong opinions about anything. Right.
Okay, this week we want to talk again about the jobs board, Corin Tuition Jobs. It's at jobs.corin.org, and there's been a bunch of great activity there in the last week. It's been really nice to see. I mean, just the other day, we got New York Times posted a couple iOS positions. Discuss, which is a commenting system that's used on pretty much half the internet, it seems like these days. Apple's got more jobs in there in Cupertino and in Pittsburgh for iWork and other Cocoa engineers. Several other ones. You can scroll down the list. The Binary Family, they want an expert iOS engineer in Germany or some kind of time zone around there. So I've just been really excited, Daniel, to see the activity there. A lot of really interesting jobs and a good mix of places around the U.S. and the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited. I'm curious, and one of the reasons I think it's good we're talking about this on the show again as like the full-fledged sponsorship spot is I'm kind of curious if this isn't helping to, you know, actually legitimately drive more companies and more, you know, potential employees to the job board. It seems like it's really picked up in the past month or two since we started, using the sponsorship spot for the job board here and there. And I'm so impressed with the variety and quality of jobs that show up on the board. And I look at some of them and I'm like, wow, that would be really great for somebody. Like, there's this one, Capital One, right? Mm-hmm. And they want an iOS wallet developer, and they're in McLean, Virginia. McLean. I don't know how you say that, but I just think like I saw this listing. I was like, wow, what if I was like an iOS developer who lived anywhere near McLean, Virginia, and happens to like be a Capital One customer, and I was like, oh, look at this app. I have so many great ideas for this app that would make it so much better.
Right, exactly.
And then you go on jobs.corin.org and you're like, whoa, dude, Capital One wants to hire me to, you know, improve their iOS wallet. And I love that there's like this variety of jobs. Like the New York Times is another good example where it's like, dude, I know the New York Times. Like I value and respect the New York Times. And like, if I were looking for a job in New York, that would seem really compelling to me. Like, go work at the New York Times. That's awesome. And I just so impressed the breadth of jobs we've got here on the job board. I have felt this way, Manton, since we started doing the job board. It makes me feel a little bit funny because it kind of makes me want to go get a job.
Yeah.
But this is an opportunity for all of you out there who are even more determined to get a job than I am, so be sure to check it out if you are at all in the market for a job. Just go take a look and see what other people are posting. It's some interesting stuff, and if you are an employer, somebody who wants to have your company name up there along with companies like the New York Times, Apple, other big and companies big and small, then go over to jobs.coreint.org. It's just $200. You get 30 days up on the board for $200. Your listing goes out in an RSS feed. It goes out to our Twitter account, Coreint Jobs. And I think, Manton, dare I say, I think this thing is working. I think, you know, it's getting the kind of focus on a small niche job, you know, scene that we were looking for. And great companies are posting. Great applicants are looking at the jobs, applying, getting hired. It's a good thing all around. And it will help us to keep the thing going if you keep visiting it, if you're looking for a job, and if you encourage your company to post a job there if they are looking to hire excellent coworkers for you to work with.
Yep, so check it out, jobs.coreint.org. And we have a couple quotes on there. And if you got a job, you know, some of you listening may have gotten a job or pursuing a job in one of these companies. If it works out or you have any experience with it, let us know or tweet something out about that you got a job via the board. It'd be great to hear how things are going.
Thanks again to Core Intuition Jobs, our favorite job listing company that happens to be us.
All right, so we picked up a couple listener questions last week, and we went on and on about them longer than I thought we would. And so there was a couple more we wanted to hit last week we didn't have a chance for, so we're going to go through some more of those today. And it follows in the same kind of theme from last week about Mac apps. And also Swift. So the first listener question is from Neville Nason. And he asks about, you know, he wants to learn Swift, but he also wants to get his app up and running in the App Store as quickly as possible. And so he writes, I know that I'd be much more productive working in Objective-C versus Swift. Plus, I could take advantage of the many Objective-C open source components out there. So as an indie or hobbyist developer where you're the engineering team of one plus UX plus webmaster plus user support, how do you balance the trade-offs around moving from Objective-C to Swift? And so this is exactly kind of what we're talking about earlier in the show in terms of what he mentions with taking advantage of Objective-C shared code that's out there. It's exactly what you did in your project on GitHub, and you probably would have learned more Swift if you had just done it pure Swift or ported those. But of course, then you would be spending all week on this little hack instead of working on other stuff. And so he's having the same kind of dilemma. He wants to get his app up and running quick, but he really wants to keep his skills relevant too and keep up with what Apple is doing. So do you have any advice for him, Daniel?
Well, first of all, I would point out that the question's good, but the phrasing, plus I could take full advantage of the many Objective-C open source components out there, is absolutely true if you choose to develop the app primarily in Swift as well. And that's one of the great things about Swift. It was designed with taking advantage of Objective-C in mind. And, you know, early on, we had complaints about it where it felt short of really interacting, you know, as well with Objective-C as we wanted it to. But they've addressed that, and it's like you can really call Objective-C stuff, and for the most part, everything you need to access in Objective-C, you can do. You can, you know, in C2 for that matter. There's even like argument types. One of the things I ran into in my little test project was I needed to call from Swift C functions that passed back values by it's a pointer reference, so it's like those methods, for example, that like you give it an NS error variable and it fills it in with an allocated NS error object, right? And that, you know, there's no like pointers in Swift, but it has like this type for like a pointer argument, and it'll do that. It'll take care of that for you. So really, I think that one you can scratch that off the list. Taking full advantage of the Objective-C open source components out there, that's only going to be a problem if you're going into this with some kind of like religious rule, like I won't have any Objective-C in my app. And some people will probably take that approach, but I would say, you know, just from a pragmatic point of view, don't let that be the thing that keeps you from going all Swift for the bulk of your app, if that's what you're interested in. On the other hand, it's like this guy's question from his point of view, he says he knows he'd be much more productive working in Objective-C. So I don't know. I think that's the answer in the short term. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, some people are 110% confident that they will be more productive in Swift because they're coming at it from a different point of view. Either they have never worked with Objective-C and Swift is closer idiomatically to languages they're comfortable with, or they just, even though they're experienced with Objective-C, they feel so drawn in by some of the language features of Swift that they're confident that they will get past the learning curve and become so productive that it will pay itself back. So there's that stuff. But then, like, I don't know, Manton, I'm just still on this side of the, I'm on this side of the inevitability declaration for Swift. A lot of people are treating Swift like it's inevitable that everything's going to switch to Swift. And I'm on this side of that, meaning that even though I see that Apple is strongly embracing this language and pushing it and trying to convince everybody, they're not just trying to push it as a peer to Objective-C. They are literally presenting it as superior to Objective-C for the typical development of software. And nonetheless, I'm not convinced that this is a sure thing. I'm not sure. I think I'm still more confident that an Objective-C source-based will stand the test of time than a Swift source-based. And that doesn't mean I'm real negative about it. It just means that there's that little tinge of uncertainty. So, but you know, don't ask me. I'm the guy who picked Mercurial and still can't pronounce it.
That's interesting. I mean, because I certainly would not, if you jump into Swift, it's this thing with Apple where sometimes they make a mistake, and maybe it's not even a mistake, but it's something they change their mind on. And if you invest too much time into it and they reverse course, you're in trouble. And there's a whole laundry list of technologies from OpenDoc to QuickDraw GX to more modern ones that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Garbage collection, you know, there's a whole bunch that they've done this with and people have spent months or years and then it's all been for nothing. And I don't think Swift is like that, but I think it's telling that you said you're not really sure, which is kind of the most future-proof. And I don't know. I mean, I think it would have been a clearer statement maybe if the watch had embraced Swift more. I mean, a lot of people thought maybe that it would be Apple's opportunity to say, no, Swift is the real thing. It's here now. It's production ready. Use it. And you have to for WatchKit. Of course, they didn't. And I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll have to wait till WWDC 2015 to get another statement from Apple. Like, for example, if every slide is only in Swift, you know, for every session, that's pretty obvious statement that, you know, you're going to be doing more work by keeping Objective-C around for new projects because you're going to have to do that translation every time from the documentation.
I think I know what sort of like represents my hesitation to be totally confident, 100% confident that Swift is here for the long haul. And that is, you can imagine a scenario where fairly or unfairly, the management structure at Apple changed such that people in charge of making the final call on technologies happened to be people who preferred Objective-C. And at the moment today, I don't believe there is enough Swift code within Apple itself that there would be enough of a backlash against like a political choice to say cancel Swift. I want to reiterate, I really don't think this is going to happen. Yeah. But it's the kind of thing where wrongly or rightly, these kinds of technological choices get reversed sometimes. And it doesn't necessarily mean, like, for instance, sometimes really it seems right in most respects. Like you know, it's a poor comparison, I think, but like, you know, Java was a fully supported Cocoa development language.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
And it was support for that was terminated. Not because there was, not because there was anything too technically infeasible about continuing to support Java. But you know, it made sense to like focus on one language. It made sense to, you know, kind of like stick to the features of Objective-C, the features of one language. And to be honest, when they decided to cancel support for Java, I don't think there was much Java Cocoa inside Apple. On the other hand, there was, you know, at least a significant amount of Java Cocoa outside of Apple, because people had taken Apple at their word and said, oh, this is cool. Java is a first-class, fully supported language for Cocoa development. I happen to love Java. I'm going to go out and write all my apps in Java. In fact, I'm sure that people out there converted their Objective-C code to Java because they were so excited about that.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. And so I guess you want to look for what's the first Apple app that uses Swift. And then it maybe feel a little more safe. Because yeah, if this is just something they're doing to make folks outside the company, you know, web programmers and other folks coming into development happier, and it's not something they're using in like actual shipping apps on iOS, it's not cause for concern, but it's a little bit annoying, I think.
Yeah, and I think that that's exactly what I mean when I say it's not quite inevitable yet. And as soon as I see enough progress from within Apple where I can easily imagine it being sort of past the point of no return, like, you know, there's a certain amount of transition to Swift that happens where I would say, okay, this is absolutely the future of Apple because they've invested so much in it. Like, there was a point when we were switching from OS 9 to OS 10, mm-hmm. where OS 10 was a fully legitimate public for purchase product that Apple had put all of its momentum behind. And I would have felt the same way about it. And I did feel the same way, I think, about it at that time, even though I was working on it. I felt this thing is so much better than OS 9. It has so much more practical opportunity for the future. But similarly, I think something political could have happened back then that would have, when it came down to it, for some period of time, like, I don't know, months, maybe years, even after 10.0 came out, I think OS 9 was still more valuable, more fundamental technology for the company, mm-hmm. for better and for worse, right?
Well, and to take like some specific apps too, even on Mac OS 10, you know, I think like when I said the first iOS app that used Swift, I think about something like the Finder when it finally transitioned from Carbon to Cocoa. It's like, that's another one of those, oh, okay, yeah, all you Carbon developers out there, yeah. The Finder is, you know, a very old legacy app. It's been through a bunch of these weird transitions, but maybe my memory is not quite right, but it was Carbon for quite a while, a number of releases, Mac OS X. But when it finally became, you know, more of a full Cocoa app, that's an obvious sign.
And that's a tell that, yeah, Apple's committed to Cocoa.
Yeah. And of course that probably happened after third-party developers were already committed to Cocoa by maybe a couple of years, but if it had, I can't remember the timing, but that's just an example of like, okay, they're serious about this.
Yeah.
In this question from Neville, he also, I didn't read the whole thing, but he talks about a couple angles to this. And one of the things he said is, you know, I'm sure I could keep doing nothing but Objective-C for the next few years. You know, but he's interested in Swift. And I think the few years actually feels kind of like the right way to think about this, because it will take a while. Even if Swift is the thing, it will take a while before you absolutely need to embrace it. I mean, even if you look at things like auto layout or something, I mean, we're at least a few years into auto layout, and it's still something that people are dragging their feet on and not totally on board with, although that's, I think, accelerating, happening more and more this year. So you have time. It's not, I don't think anyone needs to say today, I need to move to Swift by a certain date, but you do need to have it in the back of your head, at least over the next couple years and just adjust as those couple
right,
years.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a couple years I could be looking at it and saying, you know, I have a different stance at that point. I say it's inevitable now because Xcode is implemented in Swift.
Exactly. And, yeah.
You know, and then I start saying, at some point I start saying, you know, similarly again to the comparison with OS 9 and OS 10, there was a point where it was like, yeah, it's very, very clear that OS 9 is never going to come back. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to be a crazy person to think at one point, you know, there were some, they were like, well, this is a brief interlude before the rise of OS 9. And it's going to be so embarrassing for Apple when OS 9, you know, comes back to succeed 10.2 as you know.
Right. But it took a while, right? I mean, we all remember those 10.0 yeah. and 10.1. I mean, it's a little shaky at the beginning. It takes a while to pull off such a huge transition like that.
Yeah. So yeah, I think, you know, I'm a big fan of the progress you can make with the technology by just dipping into it a little bit here and there. Like I really think I've used this kind of like metaphor before, Manton, but like I think I sort of started the clock on my Swift understanding and experience just by trying it out a couple times here and there. And I think that goes a long way. So I think there's sort of inherent in this question is a little anxiety over whether he needs to adopt Swift now so that he can get good at it fast enough. And I think you don't want to put off any exposure to it at all until the 3, 5, 10 years down the road when it's actually like, you know, the predominant way to develop for Apple's platforms. But you just get a lot by just saying, okay, well, why don't I spend like an hour every couple weeks looking mm-hmm. at Swift?
Yeah.
And you don't have to be like the full on Swift genius to be accumulating some experience that will pay off down the road.
Yeah. And I like the idea of what you did too, just kind of a small side hack project, not anything big, like the new version of Clipstar I've been working on off and on for forever. You know, when Swift came out, I made one file in Swift. I thought, you know, I'll just introduce Swift files here and there. But that didn't really make any sense, actually, and I pulled that out, and it's just all Objective-C again, because it just wasn't the right project and environment to introduce Swift in such a small, like insignificant way. But like little one-off projects, I think, are fun to work on. They're pretty self-contained. You don't have to ship them, and you can learn a lot.
Yep.
So thanks again for the question, Neville. And we had another question we're going to get to, but actually we kind of need to wrap up the show. So we'll have more listener questions next week, more news and stuff. And of course, if you have any feedback about these questions or other stuff in this line, you can send it to feedback@corn.org. Tell me how I totally got the Swift interoperability stuff wrong at the beginning of the show and any other number of topics.
And you can always tell me how much of a fool I am for not embracing the full beauty of Swift. But while you are feeling that way, don't forget to go take your Swift genius and your clear view of the future and head over to jobs.corient.org and find a company that can take advantage of your brilliant insights into the future of programming.
And if you like the show, leave a review on iTunes in the podcast directory. And we'll talk to you next week, Daniel.
See you then.
Bye.